Hello, you are listening to the High Performance Nursing Podcast with me, Liam Caswell, where I help clinicians just like you take control of their careers and remove all the things stopping you from achieving your biggest goals. Let's dive in. Hello, amazing humans. Welcome back to the High Performance Nursing Podcast. I'm so excited that you are here today, spending your precious time with us. Today, I've got a beautiful guest. It's Laura Wellham-Turner. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Hi, thank you, Liam. It's nice to see you. Thanks for having me on.
This has been a long time coming. I feel like I say that every episode.
You probably do, but it's probably true each and every time.
It is true in our case. Hey, so when did we first connect? We first connected a couple of years back, hey, through the socials. Yeah.
Through the socials, after I found your podcast, returning from one of my shifts when I was contact tracing at the time, actually. I just left my job, like the job that I'd grown up doing, and eventually evolved my way out of. And yeah, I was signed up for another job, and during the recruitment process was when COVID happened. So that whole unit that I was about to join actually got redeployed into contact tracing. And it was after one of my first shifts there, I was obviously clearly trying to find some sort of podcast that would make me feel a bit better about my life decisions on the drive home. And I think I typed in nursing or high performance or something, and you popped up and there you were. And so I listened. I can't even remember the exact episode, but I remember getting home and then sending you a DM pretty much straight away, just saying thanks for existing right in this moment to be my little angel in my ears.
I love that. I actually remember that. I forgot it was through DMs and you messaged me, and I like, this was like early days, I think, in the podcast. So when you get those messages, I'm like, oh my God, like somebody actually listened.
There's probably 1,000 typos as well. So.
Oh God, you're talking to me. There's typos galore in my shit. I love it. So let's talk about your career, because we've got so much to cover. We're covering all things nursing careers.
We can do lots of things.
All of the things. Spirituality, just teasing you all to stick around so that you keep listening. Nursing and how you combine those two worlds. And an awesome podcast that you created and is out there that people can go and listen to, which we will talk about later. Yeah. So start us off with where you started your nursing career and what that looked like.
Sure. So I've been a registered nurse for 20 years now, and I did the obligatory become an AIN while I was studying my RN. So I did the working in a dementia specific nursing home. That still remains the hardest physical work I've ever done.
Amen.
And hats off to aged care, hats off to everybody in that area, because they're amazing, and I don't think that's often spoken about enough. Studied and then did a new grad year on the Central Coast, and I did beautiful 5 rotations through my local LHD, and always loved theatres, and stayed around a bit longer in operating theatres. I actually met my now husband the way back then, but I wanted to do my 12 years new grad and then take off overseas for a couple of years to the UK, which we did together in the end. We wound up working in Scotland in Paisley, which was beautiful, in operating theatres there.
Wow.
And then came home and essentially got our old jobs back, because we were so broke by that time. We'd made money, but then we spent it travelling, as you do. So that was a great time. And then, mostly operating theatres, scrub scout nurse. Really liked working my way through all the different disciplines. And that has served a really great purpose of providing such a great employment opportunity and learning. But also we had 2 kids during that time. And when I started part-time work after going back to work from becoming a mum, I moved into education. So I became a clinical nurse educator within operating theatres and loved that. Had a bit of burnout. I think there's nothing like becoming a parent that sort of makes you even more vulnerable and emotionally more raw, and certain things that I was so sure about beforehand, all of a sudden I'm just this emotional being, couldn't tell you which way was up some days, and that could speak a lot to sleep deprivation is deprivement.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a bit of burnout and I looked around at supports that were available and there were some, but I think my initial thing was there was a few critical incidents at work or a few situations where I could have done with a bit more support. And I certainly didn't have the skills myself to support myself and I couldn't, there was nothing obvious immediately in the environment. So I did a project all on hot debriefing and what models were out there, what we could use. And so I developed the hot debrief project for operating theatres. And that really got me some more mentors. I met some other people within the hospital, in the nursing and midwifery directorate where they house nurse educators, some practice development staff that are all nurses by trade and nurse managers in those areas. And they helped with the project, sort of get it out there a bit wider and just implement it a bit more. And that's where I've eventually got a job now working for the last 3 years. Well, since contact tracing ended, that's where I was supposed to go.
Thank God.
Yeah. Wow. So I guess I've really evolved from caring for patients to caring for staff as well and really super invested in well-being, any kind of well-being supports that we can do and proactively do rather than a reactionary after the fact. Which hot debriefing is, of course, but when we look at well-being for staff in the healthcare environment, especially big hospitals, it really takes some proactive support systems there to help build staff up before the burnout occurs.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Wow, what an amazing journey. I would love to unpack your experience because a lot of our listeners want to maybe travel overseas and go and work in the NHS. Did you work as a contract nurse? Like, were you hired directly or was it agency?
Agency.
Yeah. And is that what you would recommend going over to anybody that wants to test it out?
Because they look after sort of like a one-stop shop. So they pointed us in the direction of how to best get our registration over there. So things changed quite a bit during the time we were trying to get our registration. It used to just be pay this fee and we'll sort of be able to do that. But we had to sit an academic English test, but we could only do that once we were over there. And so the agency helped with all of that sort of stuff. The one that we were with also found us accommodation. That came straight out of our pay, so it was less to sort of worry about, and we were extremely sort of carefree, so it really ticked all those boxes for us.
Amazing. How did you find Paisley and working there?
Well, they did. Again, so we sort of just put our sort of specialties in and our experience in, and the funny thing was so we had to do the academic English test, but we also had to do a little bridging course, an online bridging course through one of three, I think, at the time, universities. We're going back a fair way, Liam.
Right.
So I'm having trouble remembering. There's three unis throughout the UK, and one of them was the University of Paisley. But that's where we ended up working, and those two things weren't related either. So, yeah, it was always...
That's hilarious. That English test, I have trauma from that English test. I mean, English is my second language because I just speak Scottish, which is not really an actual language. But I had to sit the English test here in Australia to get my citizenship. I had to sit it twice. I failed it the first time. To be fair, I did fail it on the writing, which is hilarious that's the service that I provide is the writing. But it was because I didn't use bloody topic sentences.
Oh,
I was like, who the hell?
It was a structure thing.
It was a structure thing. Yeah, obviously I can write. Like, you know, I've got 2 months. Like, I was sitting there mortified when I got my results back.
Yeah.
I mean, I failed it in the context of the fact that I needed like eight points on the system and I got like 7.
Crazy.
I was like, devastated. So I had to pay another bloody $450 and go and put myself through it again.
None of it's hilarious cheap either. Good on you for saying that. My God.
Oh, I tell people this all the time because we have so many amazing international nurses that come and work with us.
Yeah.
And they'll say, Liam, I sat that English test and I'm so embarrassed and I failed. I'm like, listen, I speak English and I failed.
Well, the day we had to do our oral examination, and this is crazy too, I actually lost my voice. So I showed up and I don't know where my voice went. I was feeling a little under the weather, but yeah, I whispered the whole oral examination.
I love it. And those oral exams, I'm just going on a side note here, they are ridiculous. Like, it's so crazy. I remember sitting there with somebody who was deadpan in the face, and they were like, can you talk me through your house, please? Like, take me through your house room by room.
And
I
had to describe something.
And then they were like, who's your favorite singer? And like, me being just a big, you know, like gay, I was like, oh my God, I love Beyonce and Jessie. It was cringe. Maybe that's why I failed, actually. He was like, I don't think so. We're not letting you in.
Doing an interpretive dance performance or something.
Right. I can do that for you for sure. Jazz hands galore.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, we digress. But so NHS experience, amazing. What did you notice was like a difference between Australian nursing and NHS nursing? Anything that stood out for you in particular?
The camaraderie in the theatres, it was a bit, and I don't know if that was just because it was a smaller hospital, but everyone was a bit, you know, they all had breaks together. We all stopped for tea.
Yes. Yeah, it's such an NHS thing.
Yeah, like the anaesthetists and the surgeons and the regs and all the nurses, the auxiliaries, like their AINs. And the head nurses, we all stopped and then and had tea together. And even when we were leaving, they all took us out. We all had this massive farewell, and it was all of them again. You don't see that as much here.
I noticed that, yeah. Yeah, when I was doing my student nursing, we used to like wait on the ward for everybody. Like, we'd go as a cohort to the staff cafeteria off the ward.
Yeah.
And we would all like, everybody be standing with their bag at the door, and they'd be putting the pressure on you saying, no, you need to come for break. Like, now it can wait. And then we'd all go and have tea together. Like, we'd have two groups, and we'd have like a, it's very British, but we'd have a scone or a scone or whatever you want to call it. And you'd have your like actual break. Like, you'd have your full break, and then you go back, and you know, and I noticed that. I mean, I noticed that when I moved down England as well, but we didn't have that kind of protected time and space. Great thing for staff wellbeing. And I mean, a lot of these places, these smaller hospitals, don't have such high turnover. So maybe they're onto something.
Go figure. Just
connection and community.
Take care of
imagine
basics.
That.
Yeah. Groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking. You heard it here first. I love that. So you talked about the fact that you worked in the NHS and then you moved back home.
Yeah.
And that you went through a phase of exploring different things and you became a CNE.
Yeah.
You burnt out. And you talked about the skills to, like, you didn't feel like you had the skills to support yourself.
Yeah.
Talk me through, like, on reflection now, what you think some of those skills are that past version of you needed post burnout.
Well, actually quite a lot of the things that I've come to listen and learn and tune into your podcast to hear about, that self-regulation, even that ability to look at myself as a practitioner rather than just showing up as the tired mum. I mean, it sounds so obvious, but it's certainly not anything that I learnt in any subjects at uni, or even growing up in high school, right? Because it's not just isolated to healthcare workers. It would be
humans.
A really useful thing for every human to learn is, you know, sure, you learn a little bit about a learning mindset or a little bit about visualization. And I remember doing PDHPE in high school, and we learned about how you can, you know, practice things in your mind, but not self-regulation quite so much, or anything about too in depth about well-being. I mean, that term well-being still confuses people. So that was certainly not anything that I'd looked into or learnt about. So yeah, I guess that ability to look at all the stresses, or even able to identify, I'm really tired today. I'm not firing on all cylinders. So if I'm already aware of that now, and I know I'm going into a challenging environment or a challenging situation has occurred, I didn't have that awareness. I wasn't approaching situations with that in the back of my mind. So there's that, you know, proactivity or preemptiveness that somehow, especially as a theatre nurse, especially an instrument nurse, you're trained to preempt what a surgeon wants and what's going to happen.
Right.
I sort of didn't have that filter on myself. And
yeah.
Until it obviously, you know, is lacking, you don't often realize that that would have been helpful.
Right. I think it's still funny because everything that I feel like we teach and every nurse that I connect with tells a very similar story, in the sense that, like, we're so good at gathering data clinically and like assessing our patients and, you know, deciding for them their plan of care and creating this holistic pathway. Yeah. And then when we turn the mirror back to ourselves, it's like, what, like, did we just lose all of the knowledge? Like, where is it gone? And what you're talking about there is like collecting your own personal clinical data, right? Like, I have this thing now where I've been teaching this with our grads recently, and this idea of how can you, every time you check in with a patient and you assess a patient, how can you use that as an opportunity to just check in quickly with your nervous system and just to raise your awareness of yourself? Like, just to stop for a microsecond, because you've got a minute whilst that cuff goes off, right? Like, you've got 30, whatever That's time right. that takes.
Yeah.
So what if when you're looking at that ops chart, you check in with your own ops and you check in with, like, how am I feeling? Do I feel stressed? And just that awareness is such an important first step. Mm-hmm. That you're right, no one teaches us. You know, we're not here to blame anybody, like, no one teaches us. I feel like generations coming up now do have that raised awareness because of the internet, because of TikTok and the internet and all of the things.
Much smarter than me, though.
Right? Like, we are now so exposed to it that it's becoming part of the conversation. But like, kudos to Past Laura, that was like, you know, I need to raise my awareness. I need to recognize what's happening here in order for me to move on and to build the life and the career that I want to build. So I think that's the missing piece for a lot of us, is we're so energetically, spiritually, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally disconnected from ourselves, that when you step into the identity of being a nurse, like, you bring that almost home. A nurse becomes, I think, I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, but I feel like we bring that identity home. It becomes who we are at our core, and there's no detachment from it.
It's fascinating, and truly that's a topic that I really love. So when I did go through my whole burnout situation, and then I started seeing an awesome therapist, and we went through all kinds of things about, you know, the ego of a nurse and how it serves such a important part of our role as a nurse. That's what gives us the ability to know we can go in and respond to a cardiac arrest or those sorts of situations.
Right.
But when it doesn't serve in other areas or aspects of our life, because that ego, you know, tells us we're a nurse, we know everything, or is that a false persona? Sometimes it actually is. Like, we don't have to know everything, and how could we possibly know everything? And you know, even, you know, if you want to dive deeper still, as I had to go right down to the depths of looking at my martyr persona, and I'll just do that, or my people pleaser, you know, I worked out, you know, why did I even want to become a nurse? It's because I liked helping people. And why did I like helping people? Because then people might like me, you know, that sort of thing. And
exactly.
So once you sort of relearn your motivations, well, if that's no longer my prevailing choice to pursue, do I still even want to be a nurse? And for me, my answer was, well, absolutely, because I get back much more when I help people than just feeling that people like me. You know, now that side has sort of been illuminated and worked through, I made the choice to keep returning to it because I really am passionate about helping people. It sounds so cliche.
Yeah.
Whether that be patients or other healthcare workers, and I've learned ways to support myself, and I'd love to, you know, help be that person that helps support others.
And I love that so much.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so powerful, because what I hear there when you tell that story is that, you know, the past version of you, like, had parts of you that, you know, wanted to become a nurse to fulfill the needs of those parts of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of that past version. But now you have the awareness. Now you can see. Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful thing about awareness and giving yourself permission to then make a decision. It's not like, and we all go through the phase where we raise our awareness to it, and then we maybe beat ourselves up a little bit. Like, well, why
did I do that? Oh, there was plenty of that too, yeah.
Right? Like, I'm so horrible to me.
I found a really great therapist that, you know, helped me with that. So, you know, finding that self-compassion is another learned skill.
100%. Which again, no one teaches us, right? So it's like, as nurses, we are walking into the fire every day, potentially, regardless of where you work. And if we don't have those kind of core foundational, you know, they're basic, but yet they're complex because they're challenging. Because if they were easy, then everybody would be super light and walking around energetically available.
We'd be transcending here, there, and everywhere.
We'd be everywhere. But it's the basics that are complex, right? So it's like, how can we help? That's why I do this podcast, right? It's like Liam's musings half the time, but it's a, how can I help you raise your awareness of what it is that you want to do so that you can then go out there and redecide and reinvent and recommit? Because that's life, right? We're not here to just stay put suffering mentally and emotionally in a role that is no longer what we want. And I think that not enough people give themselves permission to go out and do something different.
That's right.
And I know why, because the ego's on board, right? Like, it's the critics on board. And that was me for a decade.
Yeah.
I was like sitting there just like, but this critic that's like, you can't quit. You're too invested. There's going to be a sunk cost here if you leave.
Yeah.
You know, you did a master's in leadership. What are you going to do if you leave? Like, that critic was so loud. But then in the same breath, like you said there, my critic stops me from jumping out in front of a car when I'm crossing the roads.
Yeah.
You know, it protects me in the moments that I need it. It's just, how can you balance that and raise your awareness to the fact that the critic's always going to be there? So many people will say to me, Liam, I just don't want to think like this. I don't want to feel like this. I'm like, well, good luck. Good luck with that. That's not my response. But cognitively, I'm like, good luck. Because it's not viable at this point in time. We still have to learn to live with that ego and it's the critic in the mortar.
Yeah.
And then like give yourself permission to see it for what it is and use that data to make an informed decision, just like you would at work.
Exactly. And being able to do that and apply other lenses to it. Because I think as healthcare workers, we are so trained to mitigate harm and identify risk and preempt all the negative things and then stop them from happening or stop them from being quite so bad, which is great. But then when that sort of filter takes over every aspect of our life where we're expecting the worst, we're, you know, looking for faults, and we forget that we can reflect on how far we've come, and we reflect all the lessons learned and how great things, like we forget to turn around and look at all the good things that we have achieved, which is so important to keep us going,
right? But for forward momentum, again,
it's a learned skill, and especially as healthcare workers, that's not what we're trained to do. I mean, more and more so we are now, and I'm really sort of inspired by, you know, when I go to work courses and there is talk about, you know, healthy mindsets and, you know, that learning environment and how can we create positive learning environments and looking at lessons learnt and rather than, you know, blame culture and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's shifting slowly, and that's why I keep doing what I'm doing. That's why I keep going to my job, is that hope that needle is turning just enough to keep that new direction in focus, especially for the new nurses coming through and how to support our existing workforce to strengthen them and just do what's possible. Because I think, you know, the ideal is up here and we can shoot for the stars. We know where we need to go.
I love that so much. I think that what you said there is on the money. We are trained assassins at dealing with worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like, we are trained, like, even today, I was walking
through
QVB.
That's what we're paid to do.
That's what we're paid to do. Like, I'm walking through the coffee shop, and after what's happened recently in Sydney and across the country, you know, like, my nervous system, fight or flight stress response is, like, on high, high alert.
Sure.
I'm sure everybody is, right? But, I think even more so as nurses, like, that's just how we walk around life. That was me for a decade. Mm. Everything was going to collapse, crumble, fall in a heap. And it was going to be the worst case scenario. Because in ICU, that's how I was paid. You know, if I don't pick up the problem, I'm probably going to get sacked. Or I'm going to be performance managed.
Yeah.
So we've got to unlearn that skill. Mm.
It's not normal. Just to look at it for what it is. I know, you know, in operating theatres, you talk about what you did on the weekend while there's an open body on the table. And that's it becomes your normal, but to be able to then view it as though this isn't normal. We'd have students come in and, you know, you'd see their, you know, bright eyes just go, this is very confronting. And then you're talking about what you're planning for dinner or what's on your grocery list. And then you forget how desensitized you become to it all, but to try and remember. And that, again, is a coping mechanism as well, isn't it?
Yeah. To our body and mind adapt.
But 100%. Just being aware of it all, so you can see where all the pieces fall into place, rather than just being a product of a, you know, one reaction after the next reaction, rather than measured responses from awareness.
I feel like it gives us a sense of false control. That thought pattern, like when we believe that we always have some kind of control over the uncontrollable, that we kind of almost, well, this was me, I'd like would lie to myself that I had control over things in my life that I had no control over, right? And it wasn't until I started building that awareness and stepping back and seeing it through a different lens, like you say, like a safer lens, that I was able to go, okay, like why did I ever believe that I had control over whether or not my ICU patient today would survive or not? Yeah. You know, like I have no control over that whatsoever, right? It's not, I'm not God, I'm not in charge of what happens here. Yeah. But we're kind of almost sold that narrative, and it's fascinating. And that leads us to get into the mindset of failing ahead of time, where we decide automatically that this is not going to work, despite the fact that we haven't collected all of the data, right? Like if we're just looking at the negative, the worst case scenario, we've got one side of the story. So we need to give ourselves permission to go and look at the other. So it sounds like that was naturally your journey through therapy and through getting the support and developing those skills, was you were gifting yourself, gifting future Laura all of the tools to be able to go back into the workforce.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly why I do what I do and what I felt like was missing from the system. I'm not a therapist, but even just like that awareness, I feel gives people so much hope and permission to be able to progress and to go after what they want unapologetically.
Right. Yeah. We can learn these skills. That's it. You don't need those. I went to therapy to learn that and much more. And of course it involved much more than my job. It helped with family life and, you know, my marital life and all of that, but those sorts of things. You know, it impacts everything.
Absolutely.
But certainly therapy helps, but you don't need therapy to learn these tools and these life strategies. And that's what I've really come to appreciate about your podcast, is because it has all of that, but it's really tailored to healthcare workers as well. I just love what you do, and I can't thank you enough for it.
Thank you. Oh, thanks. I did not pay you to say that, but thank
you. No, you didn't. But you could.
Sometimes I'm like, oh God, what am I doing? But you know, it's the reality, isn't it? And it's just, I do love to try and be that role model of like, just test and try and explore. Cause I mean, if we all had it worked out, then we'd all be lying on the beach somewhere sipping a cocktail, but we don't. But if we can make one step forward and I can help one person, that's amazing, right? And it kind of comes back to that idea. Like I want to touch base on the fact that you had this idea about hot debriefing, because so many people, you know, I think we talked about this in the past, that so many people think about themselves, you know, just as a nurse, like, well, I'm just a nurse, I just work clinically. And it's like, no, there is so much more to your role. And what I love about what you've done is you've been able to become what I would call like an entrepreneur, right, within your system. Oh, and you are an entrepreneur in the system. And you have been able to create something and find a problem and solve it. So talk us through what that looked like. Because so many people get confused or perplexed about what I even do. If I have an idea at work, like how do I bring that to creation? And what does that process look like?
I was that person too. Because for such a long time. So I started working on the Hot Debrief Project, and I wasn't a CNE at the time. I was just became very passionate about, I got a bit of a bee in my bonnet really about one time I had what was probably a bad week, if I'm being honest. And I was crying walking out of a theater where I can't remember now if someone had just passed away. It was a terrible outcome. And I'm pretty sure I was walking to the change rooms because I had to get changed out of the scrubs that were now soiled. And I was visibly upset, feeling very fragile. And my boss walked past me and said, oh, so it's two bottles of wine on the way home tonight then, is it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was my support. Oh, wow. So I did have a bee in my bonnet, and I thought there's got to be a better way to deal with that. And that wasn't, you know, that's a really good example of how bad it was. So, you know, there was also really good support at different times. But I thought there's got to be a better way to have a conversation with someone or a group of people after a critical incident. And so I did. And And many industries have adopted hot debriefing, and certainly other professions such as the armed forces, lots of healthcare workers, definitely helping careers such as, you know, psychology and counselling. They actually have it built into their professions. And not necessarily hot debriefing, but they have clinical supervision sort of every month or two where they speak to someone else just to monitor themselves. But hot debriefing is designed after a critical incident. But at the time, I didn't know how to start a project. I was a staffy on the floor. I'd never even really wanted to do projects or anything like that. So we had a clinical nurse consultant in operating theatres, and I was encouraged by one of the other CNEs that that would be the person to approach to look into this sort of thing. And I was given a model of a quality improvement project. It was sort of just a format, had to do a gap analysis and this, that and the other. And it seemed quite laborious, and I couldn't quite get my head around that whole process. So that's when I just thought, I'm just Googling this. I'm just going to look at other LHDs, look at other frameworks and models and reach out. I had a brother studying paramedics. I had quite a few friends that were police officers, teachers. Lots of sort of different avenues. So I just researched it all myself, essentially. Found some models, spoke to an education consultant attached to our LHD, and just sort of mapped it out and got doing it. I found a really good project from an adjoining hospital that they were extremely helpful. So I just sort of went a little bit more unconventional, but still sort of touched base with local people, and then eventually brought it all together. But yeah, you know, project management is now part of a role that I do, and it's not my approach to it is still not great because I still am a little bit more outside of the lines in the way that I think, I suppose, or approach things. But there's definitely fairly strict guidelines that you still have to toe the line in. So I find it difficult even these days. Like back then I could get away with it because I was a staffie on the floor just doing the best. These days it's a little bit more bread and butter, and I still struggle somewhat with the writing up mostly of it all.
I can imagine. Timeline. That's awesome though. So you were able to create something and implement it and change practice, which is incredible. And that is entrepreneurship.
So still, like, you know, it still requires, you know, ongoing, you know, education and ongoing sort of support. And so now that I'm in the role that I'm at, I actually just got to go back to they call it the Foundations of Periop course. So the education management group for Periop are great, and they really develop their staff. And so every year they run two education days for new and junior staff on everything. So I go and do the wellbeing sort of chat as well as talk about the hot debrief project. And so there's some sort of framework that you can use. So it's just it's a peer design chat. So you don't need a counselor, you don't need a therapist, you don't need external EAP in the initial time. It's just, you know, a staged, you know, seven steps to, you know, get everyone together, unpack something, help support and validate, normalize, see if other people, like if there's people that need external help, and help support them, resource that, and get on with things best you can.
I love that. I always say this, like, every nurse is a coach. Right. I feel like every nurse is a coach and a mentor. Like, that's part of our APRA code of conduct. And it sounds to me like this hot debriefing is like a reflective coaching / mentoring exercise.
Yeah. It's still reflective practice. In the acute phase. It's acute phase reflective practice.
Which is so important, right? To, again, to go full circle back to help us regulate our nervous system and let us get out of that state of fight or flight or freeze that we might be experiencing post any kind of event, and then bring ourselves back to some kind of safety. That's and even just in the connection with others, like, imagine, I'm just visualizing you walking back to the to get changed, and your boss saying that, like, how dysregulating that comment must have been in that moment for your nervous system that have just been exposed to, you know, some form of trauma. I think we massively underestimate that as nurses. We experience macro and micro traumas every day at work. things that people could not even comprehend that we experience. I'm reading a book at the moment. It's called Tiny Traumas. I can't remember the author, but it's all about tiny T's and that how all of us as humans have been exposed to tiny T's, right?
That's right.
Some of us think that we, like, in order to say that we've been traumatized or we've experienced some kind of trauma, that it needs to be this big thing. But like for me, like, I mean, losing all my stuff in a forest kind of traumatic, but like to me, I kind of feel like that's maybe like a big trauma, but like a tiny trauma, you know, could just be a comment like that. But for you, that might feel like a macro trauma. Who gets to decide what these are? You know, you do.
Exactly.
But the evidence is stacked.
Yeah.
Like in the literature around this, around clinicians and how it is just really, it impacts our mental and emotional well-being. And that that debriefing, even just connecting with a peer that holds space for you, can be so healing.
Yeah,
that's it's like such amazing
that time.
So many of us don't get access to that, so kudos to you for doing that. It's absolutely incredible.
Thanks.
I love that so much. I'm curious, for those that are listening that are like, how do I get promoted, because a lot of people come to me and say like, I want to get promoted, I want to move forward. Do you feel like that doing that project played a part in you getting to the next level in your career?
Oh, it had to have. Because I wasn't looking.
I mean, you're amazing.
I wasn't looking for it.
It's like an extra bonus.
I guess I was lucky. But yeah, showing interest and saying yes, I'll give it a go. And even, you know, the expressions of interest are a big thing, I find. You know, our managers and our leaders talk about developing upcoming leaders, but you know, how do they show that and how is that seen? And they will. If you make it easy for them to develop you, if you put your hand up and say, I would like to learn this, or I would like to do that, what can I do that will allow me to do that? You
100%.
Know, and expressions of interest are a really big one, you know, just filling in for holiday cover, holiday leave that's coming up, even if there is an official expression of interest open, you can always write letters and say, oh, I'm just writing a letter of expression of interest. I'd like to be considered for anything in, you know, future opportunities of growth in whatever area it is that you wish to do.
What I love about that is that, like, you made yourself be seen, like you could make yourself, you know, seen within the space. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, my manager knows that I want to do this, but they don't. Like they've maybe got 50, 100 staff. Like you have to make it explicitly clear. And you also have to make it easy for them to hire you. I keep talking, like, I talk about this so much, but you have to become like that irresistible offer to the to your manager, in the sense that you show them so clearly that you're willing to grow, evolve, and develop, which is awesome that you did. Now, I can't have you on the podcast without talking about, turns out she's a witch, the podcast. And if you're thinking, what the hell, let's dive into it, because it's so cool. So talk to me about Turns Out She's a Witch and like how you marry spirituality and nursing, because I know you're a very spiritual being, as we all are. You know, I think when we awaken we go, oh holy shit, like there's actually more to life. So talk me through that.
Well, I guess the gateway really was it came along around the same time as my burnout, and I really reconnected with my spirituality. It was an innate curiosity when I was younger. I loved crystals, I loved all those pretty things, and I didn't really make the correlation between that or anything else. But then through mother's group, or you know, just different conversations, found out more about what an empath was, and that was a revolution around the time of my burnout, when I my therapist was quite holistic actually. And she'd asked, had I been aware of what an empath was? And I was like, no. And she was like, well, just from, you know, listening to you describe, you know, why you want to be a healthcare worker and a nurse and how you can feel other people's, you know, innate pain and that sort of thing. I wasn't necessarily taking on emotions, so I'm not sure if it would be helpful to talk about what an empath is, but it's essentially a person who takes on other people's emotions as if they were their own. And they don't necessarily, they're not able to discern that that's happening. They're not necessarily knowing that they've taken on somebody's anger. They just know they're angry now, but maybe they don't realize it's not theirs. They just become angry and think they're in a bad mood. So I think mine was, I was able to tell that it wasn't mine, but I didn't know how to stop that. So when I realized, I was just like a highly sensitive child, I couldn't even watch football on TV. For me, it was too violent, and I was just asking, are they okay? Are they okay? Every tackle, and my parents would be like, Laura, this is not for you. And I was like, no, it's really not. I don't want to watch this. This is a horrible game. They're hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
But I digress yet again. So I guess when I was learning through my burnout ways to support myself and how I was losing energy, I think that was my return to really reconnecting with my own spirituality. And that came from just learning simple energetics, really, how I was giving away my energy and where that was being depleted rather than ways to restore it. So once I was able to see that I was an empath and that certain people would be in my life because they felt great after we'd been together, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was so drained. And why is that? And we all have a choice to set boundaries and either watch people fall away or watch those relationships blossom. And the same goes to professional life as well. I didn't have to go to work and give everything that I had in order to get through a shift. It was more about protecting my own energy levels or setting myself up so I could show up for work. And that for me was a revelation, but that really linked to my spirituality and learning about being an empath, because I had never connected the two and I wasn't aware. I thought that my way to show love or care for somebody else was giving them my energy. I didn't realize my energy was my own, that I had to protect, and that's what then I used to show up for others. Otherwise, just giving it away all the time.
Yeah.
And then from there, I developed my own sort of different spiritual practices to ground myself, protect my own energy sources, and really have a long, hard look at myself and my life and where I'd ended up and where I would like to be. And I found so much support in spirituality and even returning to basics, such as living with the seasons of the year and just acknowledging that it's not summer all the time. You know, we don't have to make hay. We're not busy
right.
24/7 12 months of the year. There's a time to really be busy, and there's a time to be reflective, and there's a time to set intentions, and there's a time to rest. And being more intentional with where my energy was going and with what I was working towards, or even figuring out what I really wanted, you know, from becoming a registered nurse, you know, at 20, 21, to then when I had all this experiencing all this break, burnout, you know, I was a mum with two young kids. I was a wife. I was working part-time. I couldn't have told you what direction I was really taking. I was just going with it. So being able to take some more direction in my life and figure out why I wanted to be a nurse and did I still want to be a nurse, and you know, all of those things as we've discussed really really led me down my spiritual path and how I can learn to support myself and really choose my directions a little bit more, be a bit more purposeful, and again being able to reflect on what led me there and all the different supports that was given to me along the way. I think when we talked about doing the debrief project, especially, all I had to do was stop and go, I want something different. I want to find something more. And then all this help, when as soon as I looked around, there was lots of help coming at me to support that. And all of a sudden I got this whole other job essentially because of it. So, you know, when you're able to open yourself up more to different opportunities, there they are. And I chose not to say no to them.
Yeah. Do you think that's because we are so addicted to being busy and that we are so constantly in this like forward motion that when we finally stop and we create some space, whether that's post burnout or we just intentionally choose, that all of a sudden we see what's been sitting there the whole time? I feel like that's my truth.
Yeah.
I feel like when we stop and we just clear our plate and we go, no, enough is enough. I'm going to just give myself some space and time. It just unearths itself. Like whatever the thing is that's meant to be. And I feel like so many people are looking for the thing or the direction or the path or the, and I'm now leaning into more of like, what if you just create a little bit of space, hold some space for yourself, and start doing these things to create some kind of spiritual boundaries or foundations. Mm. And then from there, like just paying attention to what the universe presents to you. I think so many of us are blind to that, myself included. Like, you know,
gosh, yeah,
100%. It's a work in progress,
we're still
right?
Living in this modern world, aren't we? Right. I think there is a real gift in what you just said, just to stop and have a look at where you've been and look at where your strengths are. And and for me, when I did stop and I was able to look at how spiritually supported I have always been, but not necessarily really noticed that or taken time to. Yeah. So how that led to Turns Out She's a Witch, the podcast, and Turns Out She's Psychic initially was just meeting these friends. Turns Out She's Psychic I did with a dear friend, Tracy, who's a psychic medium. And I'd had this innate curiosity about these people and what they were and were they for reals. And when I first met Tracy, I didn't know she had those capabilities. We were just friends in a gym. And then we fell out of touch because the gym closed and life goes on, and then reconnected a few years later when she showed up as the psychic medium for a Spirits and Spirits night that I was on. Yeah, and I was like, what the hell? And so we reconnected, and then I had a million questions for her because I'm a very curious person and I wanted to know all those things. And we recorded our conversations. So that's essentially, again, another way that my spiritual sort of curiosity has evolved. Mm, yeah. And, you know, you take it all with a grain of salt and you take what resonates with you.
Right.
But I like being open. I like being curious. I still have discernment and I'm still a critical thinker. I can't help it. I'm a bloody nurse. I always will be. But when I had... when I already knew this person, I felt as though, okay, well, this is, let's dig around here. So we created a podcast on that. And through that podcast, I met beautiful Shannon, who I do Turns Out She's a Witch with. And she actually was a prized photographer for years. She did wedding photography, conceptual art photography. She's an artist. And now she does ceramics. She makes mugs and ritual tools, does all kinds of beautiful artwork. She's also a pagan. And so that's like a earth honoring spiritual practice, really, you know, a pagan witch. So she follows the wheel of the year. Mm. And so I've learned so much about that since starting the podcast with Shannon. And every episode we talk to some brilliant guests about what the word witch means to them. And it's always different. It's a great one to dig around on, in a word that is still sort of laid with a bit of taboo and a bit of mystery and a bit of magic, and being able to apply some of that scientific sort of background knowledge that I have as a lens to look at, well, how can both be true and or not? Like, how is one so different from the other? And that's a nice escape as well. But it really helps me support that whole other energetic being side to myself that somehow got so disassociated with the physical self. I think it's like, you know, natural therapies and holistic approaches to help used to go hand in hand with medicine. But, you know, years of evolution see this divergent approach, whereas... Right. You know, years ago it was all together because we were better back then to see a person as a whole multifaceted creature. These days we've got the medical healthcare system and then we've got alternative therapies. And I think when we're able to apply both, there's a place for everything, isn't there?
Right. Yeah. I think what I love about that is like just your openness and your curiosity. I have binged the podcast. I was saying this before we hit record. And I love that you hold space for that. And Shannon's amazing, Tracy, as well. Like, incredible. And just the lens at which you come through it with is so interesting and fascinating. And you also do hold space for like the fact, like, could this be true? Like, you know, there's like there's healthy skepticism that comes in as well as like, oh, wow, this could totally be, or maybe this is why this happened. So if you have not listened to the podcast, you must go and listen to it. It is awesome.
Oh, thanks.
And I have to ask you, because you mentioned it, what's your definition of a witch?
Oh my gosh, Liam. So good. Oh, well, truly, someone that it stands in their power, that acknowledges their power. They might be afraid of it, but they know what they're capable of. They're open to exploring it. And the word witch as well is really has a high reverence for nature, has a high reverence for nature's cycles and seasons. And sometimes they will harness different energies of different parts of the moon, but essentially has that reverence and respect for nature and sees ourselves as part of that and working with that, not as different to it, but really
Wow.
working within that.
I love you nailed that. I put you on the spot, but you nailed that. I love that. And I'm thinking of adding witch to my resume.
Please do.
I feel like, you know, I resonate with that. And I feel like there'll be a lot of people as well that resonate with that. And I think it's so funny because we have, you know, we associate things with words and connotations. And, you know, I think of witch and I think of like TV shows and, you know, like Wicked Witch of the West, and, like all of that, you know, and it's just so interesting to hear different perspectives. And I love that so much. And I think that one thing that I've noticed in this community, but also through my own journey, is the more that I create space for myself to heal from multiple bouts of burnout and I keep investing in myself. And, you know, I just recently restarted therapy because of coming back and losing all the things in a fire. And I was like, no, I want to talk to somebody about this. Like that for me is traumatic. And each time there's like a new evolution, a new level of awareness. And I'm really leaning into the, like the energetics of life. And I think that that is a beautiful gift, if you could say, from experiencing burnout, is that, you know, from the fire, that like there is, you know, this evolution of you. And I just, the more that I help nurses or just humans or talk to people, the more I see that to be true. And that the energetics and listening and tuning into your own energetics is like the key to success. We talked about this before I jumped on, but I would, so, you know, I'm a nurse, I'm a doer. Like I can do all of the things just like you can. We can bust our ass and do it. But now I'm like, I really tune into myself and I go, is this actually what I want to do? And that for me, even though somebody listening might think, really, like that's super basic. But again, being basic, like doing the basics is complex. It's hard. And for me, that's like an ongoing challenge, is like, how can I realign with the energetics of life and what people require of me, but also the world. Like I feel the energy of the world more now, and I'm really, because of that, the burnouts and because of the self-work, you know, I had a moment today where I just like felt so aware and awake and aligned and, you know, powerful, like a little goosebump moment, like that's out of the blue, nice. Random. But isn't it nice? Like, and it's like, I used to think like, what's wrong with you, Liam? Like, what's going on? Like, and, but now I'd sense it as like this energetic alignment, and I could be making that up, but I'd rather choose that delusion than Liam, you're broken and there's something wrong with your nervous system. You know? So I think that's tomorrow. That's on the agenda tomorrow. My brain's going to mess me up tomorrow.
Balances out, right?
It does. And I think that we've been sold a lie that it should just be like this amazing life and everything's going to be perfect. And the more that you break it down and you start to see and learn from people like yourself and people like you that lead the way in this space and the workforce, it's like, no, what if there can be duality? What if you can, you know, be so scientific but also be spiritual?
That's right. I like the "and" because it used to be such a paradox, sort of like I'm really rational and I'm really scientific, but I'm woo-woo.
But I'm a witch, like, yeah.
I'm both. It's yeah. I'm this and that. It's not, it doesn't have to be one or the other. And I think older generations struggled with that a little bit more. They're a bit more black and white, whereas you know, younger people tend to be a bit more open to entertain that both can be true and how can you hold space for both. And I think, you know, simplistic by way of explaining is that we're just multifaceted.
Right.
We're not just one thing. And that's okay. We're supposed to be. You know, we're supposed to change as well. So
I love that.
You don't want to be in a stagnant little pool of water, do you?
No, and we got to let that identity shift, our soul shift, as we move through life and really open ourselves up. Because otherwise, you know, I don't believe we miss the opportunity. So I always feel like we're being aligned and realigned to the thing that's meant for us.
Yeah. that doesn't always feel good though. That's no, the thing. I think that's a common misconception.
All the time.
And the more you sort of entertain that energetic world, sometimes the challenges get a little bigger too.
Right.
And sometimes that doesn't always feel great either.
Yeah.
But growth doesn't come from being comfortable, does it?
No. Yeah, I think one of my favorite, I'm going to get it on my wall behind me because I'm trying to buy like some inspirational things to keep me moving going. Yes. But one of my favorite quotes is my coach, and she says, Brooke Castillo is her name, and she says, discomfort is the currency of your dreams. And I love that, because in the moments where life just feels really tough, like forget entrepreneurship, just life, I'm like, even like losing my stuff in the farm, like, this is discomfort. And just allowing myself to experience it and to be a hot mess express and be okay with that. And also the next day have a, you know, an aha moment and be so grateful that I wasn't in the storage container when it burnt down, or, you know, like all of these narratives that can run through your head. You know, imagine being in the house when you lose yourself. Like, I wasn't there to see it burn down. So like, I have all of these moments of gratitude, but also on the flip side of that, energetically I'm drained and I feel like I've lost everything, you know, and I feel like there's this grief process that comes, and I feel like that aligns with career, it aligns with, you know, I'm sure, you know, becoming a parent, all of these identity shifts that we go through. I think that too many of us have this idealistic version of what it should look like, what if it was just okay for it to be 50-50 and just to have this, you know, ebb and flow, because that's reality.
It's real
we're here for the realness.
Lara,
thank you so much. Parting words of wisdom, what would you offer to your past self, Lara, that was a graduate nurse, like first day, what are words of wisdom that you would offer to your past self based on what you've experienced so far in your nursing career? Going deep at the end.
I think it would have to be centered around the feelings of imposter syndrome. Every opportunity I've been offered and graciously taken up have really coincided with huge feelings of imposter syndrome. And if I could give myself advice to just be aware of it and don't let that hold me back as much, and just to realize that other people are figuring it out just as much as I am. We're all in it together, and try not to let that sort of dictate as much as it has in the past. I think just sort of holding space for it and not letting it stop me as much as it has in the past.
Beautifully said. I always feel like when we just normalize any emotion, that we're unstoppable. That's what I truly feel is possible. Like, because it's just fear, right? It's fear, and it's the fear of the unknown. But if we can normalize that you can do something and feel fear, then you can create whatever the heck you want, is my belief. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, feel the fear. It sounds like a miss to say feel the fear and do it anyway. Like, we want to feel the fear and create a safe level of experience through that fear.
That's so true. Yeah,
so that it's regulating for our nervous system. And then within reason. But it's so fascinating, because we go to a theme park, like talking about Disney, and you feel excitement and fear. And people don't often relate to that, but that's what we feel. Like, we're there and we're so excited to be there. But then when I step on that frigging roller coaster, I'm shitting myself. I feel so like I'm going to lose my life. But, you know, you go through that. It's almost so funny, because we allow ourselves to have that emotional experience.
Yeah.
On purpose. But then when it really matters, we stop ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, what if we could just take that back? Yeah. It's fascinating. But I love that. Where can people connect with you and get in touch?
Yeah, well, we're pretty active on Turns Out She's a Witch on Instagram. I'll send you the link if you want it for your show.
Yes, please.
You can always DM me on Instagram. It is a personal one until I, you know, take over the world and have my own big social media handle. Maybe when I do my counselling, I'll have something public-facing. That's where light years away now, the way I do online study. But yeah, socials, Turns Out She's a Witch is a good one. And that's where my our podcasts come through, Shannon and my podcast. So we usually release once a week on there too.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay forever curious. Bye. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I'm so privileged that you spent your time with us here today. Hey, can I ask a favor? If you know someone that would benefit from this podcast episode, please share it with them. The more you share, the more we get in front of amazing nurses and we're able to help them see that nursing on their terms across their career is totally possible for them. So I'd love if you could do that. Now, I will see you in the next episode next week. Until then, let's make this year the year that you nurse on your terms. Are you ready? Let's do it.